black hole, and maybe we're the universe that's in our black hole. And Dick had this interesting idea that it was a black hole that got older and older, and at some point it just contracted, which makes no sense because apparently we're expanding, we're not contracting. But it was his idea was at a critical time and size, the black hole contracts down to a point singularity and then explodes, and that's a series of big bangs. Now, there was an actual theory that was very similar to that. We thought that the Big Bang was a cyclical thing. We thought that there was the big explosion, the Big Bang, the scaling effect, and it slowed down because gravity would kind of break it. So eventually it would slow down, slow down, slow down, stop, and then it would start to go in the opposite direction towards the center, and then there would be a big crunch, and the big crunch would be followed by another Big Bang, and the universe was just an endless history of banging and crunching. Except, again, that we took tests and we found out that the actual distances are actually getting faster. The acceleration of the universe flying apart sent me an article of some people using, again, computer models to say that, you know, maybe in fact our universe does kind of go through crunches and bangs, but in their model they also thought that there was a hyper universe that included us as a kind of pocket universe, which is again another thing that's interesting but not. Let's see if I'm back. I timed it out, unfortunately, guys. Look, we're going very blue sky, very experimental. And unfortunately, these are all extreme simplifications. You know, if you ever sit down in a lecture hall with a bunch of postdocs and listen to them talk, you'll think that this was a lot easier to follow than what they will say. You know, they're talking about Riemann topologies and all kinds of really difficult concepts. So I'm sorry if it seems like I'm just blathering on, but there are fundamental aspects to it that are consistent. If you plot the particle all the pieces of the universe and you backtrack them to 13.8 billion years, they inevitably come to a single center. Let there be light doesn't necessarily mean that there's a center to the universe. Matter of fact, if you want to thumb through Genesis, there's a lot of confusing things, like the Earth was there before the Sun was there. So, you know, I disagree with you once again, but you're free to have that opinion, Jim.
I propose no conclusions, just alternatives to other solid conclusions, which really weren't presented, so that's fine. I just wanted to keep the conversation a conversation. Back to Roy.
Okay, I mean, we're not really doing a session on theology because, you know, if politics gets into trouble, theology will get you killed. It happened more than one to some guys and such. So, you know, I mean, again, you're free to believe let there be light was the method. It seems to be a little magic-y to me, and again, I'm sort of simplifying some aspects of what I'm saying because I don't want anyone out there to get any nosebleeds, but, you know, that's the, you know, really, you know, I mean, quantum mechanics and relativity, if you simplify them, you make them more and more incorrect. So, you know, there's a certain point where you decide simplify up to this point and not more, and everyone picks a different line in the sand. Anyway, back to you, Wes.
Okay. Interesting. Well, a organs of the pig are being transplanted to the human being. And we may, and some people, I had a situation at which somebody was really unhappy from me using a term human animal. Orangutan or any kind of monkey is an animal. And by science terms, human is an animal. So there are certain values that we have emotionally or mentally or spiritually, and those are the values, and I respect those values. But it doesn't mean that the science does it. So we need to at least understand that science has its rights to its own approach. And whether we agree with that or not, it is as it is. And it's not going to be different. There was a time of Copernicus, the Polish guy, who was a man in clergy, who decided to tell the truth. And the Inquisition was not happy from that. Are we talking about Inquisition right now, of some people who cannot accept that science? I mean, look, guys. Everything that is materialistic, make you use it. And everything that is not materialistic, make zero progress. Are you specially determined not materialistic? So, zero progress for not materialistic understanding. And 100% of progress of everything around you for materialistic form of understanding. Maybe Dr. Lloyd would use different wording, but I was trying to be cautious enough. Dr. Lloyd.
Again, everyone's free to have their opinion as far as I'm concerned. And for the most part, I think the people with other opinions feel the same way. Of course, there are extremists, and there are guys that, you know, if you go against some book or some scroll or something somewhere, someplace, you're a heretic, and you should be burned at the stake. But fortunately, there's far fewer of those these days. It's always subject to change, and eternal vigilance is required, so that people don't kind of decide that whatever they think is going on, must go on, and anyone who says anything to the negative of that needs to be thrown off the earth. Unfortunately, there are disturbed people with the extreme sensibilities that way. But hopefully we can all kind of get along and discuss things and be peaceful and calm.
Okay, so thank you very much for that. The last subject is the last subject for Paul, and he could start that space report from that. The SpaceX latest Starship explodes during the ground test. So I believe it's time for Paul. What do you think, Dr. Ray?
Well, we still got a little time, and I kind of promised Brian we get to him. So why don't Paul will obviously have that included in his discussion tonight. So maybe we should move on, and I'll see if Brian has any questions. How's that?
Thank you very much, and thank you for tonight's chance for me to talk about different things around. And to Ishia.
Okay, thank you for your participation as always. Brian, are you still out there?
I most certainly am, listening intently.
You have anything to say, any questions or what have you? Because right after you is the SpaceNet report.
Couple of comments regarding North Korea.
a very unwieldy power that possesses atomic bombs. Yet, no action on the part of South Korea or the United States is taken. Iran, a country that perhaps is developing a nuclear weapon, but has not yet obviously tested one. And we sent in these amazing ground-penetrating bombs. However, the whole thing is, with such a large country, how do you know that the uranium is even in any of those installations? Maybe just a small amount? How do you know that the uranium wasn't relocated a long time ago to some nondescript locations? How do you know if there was any uranium in these facilities, you know, for a long, long time? So they send in these three missiles, or if you want to call them ground-penetrating bombs, not knowing exactly where to hit. And then we have a president who says that the facilities have been totally obliterated. I think that this was a complete waste. And Israel was the country that had the most to lose. So they went ahead and basically started this, thinking eventually that, of course, the U.S. would come along and, you know, back them up, since we are the primary supplier of weapons to Israel, since they have very few natural resources. And we have this quagmire now that we've opened, putting us in even a worse place, because we don't even know where the uranium is. There's no detection. There's no proof. So, is this all truly justified? I think not. Let's get some other opinions.
Simple.
Okay,
W-R-K-A. Oh, Katie, should be H-C.
Yeah, one sec, Jeff. Yeah, you're getting smack dab into good old politics, which is always very dangerous. Ordinarily, I would kind of suggest, like always, that you wait until the political net that happens at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning here. Jim, if you want to say your piece. I mean, basically, some of the information was volunteered from Iran. They made numerous published statements that they wanted to build bombs. They've made statements that they didn't want to purify it beyond generator grade. The equipment that's been photographed have been centrifuges. Matter of fact, it was a big story many years ago that the Israelis put viruses into their software of their centrifuge machines to cause the centrifuges to break down on a regular basis. So some of the aspects are published and well-known and mutually agreed upon, and a lot of the stuff recently has come from Israeli intelligence, so you either believe them or you don't believe them. And if you look at the photographs of satellites, I assume, of the bombings, they bombed specific buildings in those underground places, like someone at least told them where stuff was. But, you know, is it legitimate? I don't know. Jim, you want to say something?
Sticking with your I don't know point, which is very valid, Roy, from what I understand, the folks that had the nuke stuff have been saying for decades and decades, maybe beyond decades, that they want to kill everybody that's not them. And the rest of the world was saying, well, that's nice. I think we're not going to let you have nukes. And they were not allowed to have nukes in the end. That doesn't sound unreasonable to me in any way. If that's totally untrue, well, you show me. But I'm pretty sure it's true. Back to that.
Yeah, Jim, but the problem is you could say almost the same exact thing about North Korea. North Korea manufactures cartoons of the West Coast being bombed with regularity. And yet we're just kind of we're talking about his love letters. to other politicians. So, you know, it seems that it would be more consistent to be pretty much as frightened of North Korea as Iran.
I have no debate with that, Roy, at all. Not one bit.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately. Yeah, sure, Brian.
This is really not a political commentary that I'm offering. It's more of a discussion of how do you know where something is? Is there any way to detect radiation deep underground? Is there any way that radiation hotspots could be detected by a satellite? Are there any newer technologies that could go ahead and detect enriched uranium? That was my question in essence.
Okay, well, the simple answer is no. You can pick up hot spots on the surface. Depending upon how deep you bury it, it becomes more and more and more difficult. The less enriched it is, it becomes more and more difficult. So as far as my understanding, unless it's a top secret that can't be released, they don't have any detection devices that say, yes, there is obviously weapons-grade uranium sitting there in Building 5. I don't think we're quite capable of that yet, or at least it's a top secret that they won't tell us about.
K2STP.
Yes, Chris.
Hi, Roy. Just a quick comment on this. First of all, it's a little ridiculous to think us as U.S. citizens would have the information that our government has, or the Pentagon, I should say. They have a lot more information than what we have, and they probably know a lot more than what they're talking about. And secondly, there are likely people in that regime who don't like the regime for obvious reasons, and they've probably given up not only what's in there, where it is, but probably diagrams of the actual bunker. So I would say we probably know exactly what's in there, where it is, and it's probably why they are saying they annihilated it, because they know exactly what they did to it. K2SDP.
Well, yes, the government knows a lot more than we do, but governments are not perfect. And so, you know, if you've ever gone back through the history books, a lot of times government got things terribly wrong or lied to everyone about it for another purpose entirely. And just because one guy said that it's been totally, absolutely, utterly annihilated, and, you know, the same one who kind of lied 3,482 times, I'm not quite sure. Government in general knows a lot of things that we don't know, but they don't necessarily know the right things, and they certainly don't tell us the truth all the time. So it's still up in the air in my mind. I don't take anything that I hear as kind of fundamentally the most accurate assessment known to mankind. You know, I mean, we had that whole thing in Iraq with the weapons of mass destruction thing. So again, you might say that, well, they knew that they were lying and they just decided to lie to us, or they got it wrong. Who knows?
Yeah, they can certainly make mistakes, of course, and or hide the truth, but this case is going to fall under that. And of course, it's conjecture, but it's conjecture to think that we actually know what or don't know what's in there. We have no idea what they do and don't know. Just wanted to make that point.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the best that we can have is what they tell us. And some people don't even have that. There are a lot of people who don't really pay attention to anything, and they're blissfully unaware of all of this stuff. But we only know what people tell us, and they're not perfect sources. They get things wrong, and sometimes they lie for other purposes. So most of this will come out over time. You know, again, much like Iraq came out over time, and we'll have a better understanding of what we're living through today. Jim, you wanted to say something?
Thank you. It's interesting that the Iraq thing with the weapons of mass destruction obviously was a canard. And lots of people just attribute that classification to this kind of thing. But the things they were looking for in Iran, I'm sorry, Iraq, were hard to detect. You had to actually put your physical hand on it and show it. But there's these things that are nuclear, and they do have signatures, and there's an enormous amount of equipment, whether it's drones, vehicles, and detectors. They can track this stuff. It's much more noticeable to our technologies these days, to things like, you know, cow farts. They can actually track it very much. And I think the story will be shown that what they say is happening is going to happen. That's just my guess. But I'm telling you, the ability to show what has been going on is there. They can show tracks on some satellite images with nuclear signatures. That stuff is real and is doable, and it's been happening. I hope we see it. Back to that.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the problem is that these labs are buried so down deep. You know, Iran is a mountainous area. And they've buried these things so deep that this country is at best the only country who has a bomb that isn't a tactical nuke that can actually reach the damn thing. So if you can't reach it with a bomb, you can imagine how kind of difficult it gets with sensors and such. So it's within the realm of possibilities in my mind that they've covered up the radioactive material with so many thousands of tons of concrete that it attenuates the signals. There's only, you know, so much that you could go through and still detect things.
That question.
I completely agree, but that doesn't mean there wasn't a track of vehicles going in there with the materials previously.
Maybe, but, you know, maybe they did it 10, 20 years ago, or maybe they did it at low-density isotopes, and they spun the centrifuges, and they concentrated the radioactive material when it was deep below the Earth. Brian, you want to say something?
One comment. I've been listening to everything being said, and I'm kind of analyzing it. And, you know, I really wonder if mankind is going to successfully outgrow its childhood. I really do.
Well, we'll be long gone if anyone actually accomplishes that. I hope for posterity they do. I'm very concerned because I think human beings today, if you had a time machine and could go back to Babylon, you know, 4,000 years ago, the very beginnings of civilization, and had a long chat with someone, he would seem to be very similar to people today, with strengths and weaknesses all. You know, the ancients built the pyramid, even though some idiots want to think that aliens popped down from the sky and told them how to do it. So I don't know. I don't know whether to be optimistic or pessimistic. I've seen no evidence historically in the last 5,000 years that humanity has really changed much, so I'm not quite sure if it's going to change much in another 5,000 years. And I don't know if we're going to make it. You know, people are going to be genetically engineering all kinds of terrible things and building all kinds of bombs. There's an infinite number of ways to destroy this world.
There's an old expression, I don't know if it was from the Hebrew or the Yiddish or from another language, and I'll quote it, man thinks and God laughs.
Okay, I would tend to guess it's Talmudic, about 2,000 years old, but I could be wrong. But, okay, fine, but I don't know if that gets us any place. Yeah, you sit down and you read the Bible, and you read what kind of God ordered people to do, and, Abraham was the kind of sent up to the mountain to kill Isaac, and, that's a strange one, and apparently there's some documents where there's a different ending to the story that they found someplace, but, I don't know what to make of that. God has ordered us to do really, really kind of not good things. There's a part about when they get back from Egypt where they're basically ordered to commit genocide of the Canaanites. So, I think, unfortunately, he's as much of a problem as we are. And some will say that rather than God created man in his image, it might be a case of man created God in his image. Blemishes and all.
Yeah,
the whole thing here is that being that this is a technical net, and what we're discussing is not really technical at the moment, so that's why I wanted to pick up on the non-technical part and just jump in, is because I really feel that we are destroying ourselves. There's no place for us to go. We just have Earth, and that's it. We can't go to any other planet, really, and settle down. So we may have to start all over again, worst case, or it may not even be possible. I mean, I think a lot of people just don't, it doesn't register with them.
K2SDB.
Yes, Chris?
It's interesting. I hear that very often, that how crazy we're humans are getting, and we're going to blow each other up and kill each other. I think people forget we're just an animal, and at the beginning of time, we ran around in the jungle attacking each other, one tribe and another. I mean, war's gone on forever, which I think I've heard you several times over the years, Roy. It's no different now. We just have bigger tools. To do it with, but another thing about the that bombing is one of the main objective was to get rid of the centrifuges, and there's only a few countries in the world, some friendly, I should say most friendly, a couple unfriendly, that have the technology to make centrifuges like that, and they know when they're sold, where they're shipped, where they're brought, and they do track them. They probably know exactly what's down there. K2SDP.
Yeah, but it's a case of, are they going to tell us the truth or not? Now, it's very possible that the Russians supplied them with centrifuges. They were the second country, probably the second country to have fusion bombs. So I'm sure they have a lot of old centrifuges, and they have all kinds of deals with Iran, so one of them could be centrifuges. But, if you stroll over to the Kremlin and ask Vlad if he's been selling them centrifuges, would you bother to even listen to his answer?
That's a good point. However, it's similar with China these days, and if you recall the last time we got rid of all their centrifuges, China was what they sold them. And they told it early on, and we waited for them to spend a lot more money before they got rid of them. So, who knows, Russia might be doing the same. But, like I said, there's some friendly, some not. But they see the ships. They're pretty large, and they take very specialized equipment and motors and parts that go with them, and people only do it for certain reasons. So, anyway.
Well, like all things, it gets increasingly complicated. I don't think anyone in Iran is saying they don't have centrifuges, and they're not spitting them and purifying their stock. They're just going to argue with you of what percentage of purification they're going for. And, ultimately, you could discern what they're doing, you could guess what they're doing, and you could get intelligence from spies and from saboteurs and all kinds of things. But, some of them will be truthful and accurate, and others will be false and inaccurate. And you, again, you ultimately not going to know for sure unless you go in there and actually take measurements all over the damn place. And, you know, we're probably more interested in blowing it to smithereens. So, you know, I mean, we could chat this all night long, but I really don't want to do that to poor Paul. So I thank you, Brian, for bringing up the somewhat technical subject, and thank everyone who participated tonight. And I hope in future technical nets we stay much closer into actual pure technology and not do politics, spycraft, or religion, because we're certainly not going to get away with too much of that. Anyway, thanks to everyone. And now it's time for Paul WS2N with the SpaceNet Report.
One more comment.
Okay, Wes?
It is just for me to repeat again a comment of one very much prestigious German scientist who I was able to interact with. And he said, Wes, look around you. A few thousand years passed by, and everything that is not technical, everything that is not technical, not materialistic, had zero progress. So all of the things around, with all respect to the people who have a different approach, it's a zero progress. Everything they use is made by science. And everything from 2,000, 3,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago, was made by science. So, could you please be so kind and point me at least one thing? One thing we use every day that spiritualism made and to achieve it.
Okay, religion.
Got a point.
Yes, yeah. Well, my answer is religion. What do you want to say, Jim?
I'll leave it technical or philosophical. Wesley, name me one problem that government has ever solved. Not our government, any government. Not our time, any time. Name me one problem that government has ever solved. Ever, anywhere. I'll be listening. Back to that.
Wesley?
No, I leave it to you.
Leave it to who, you?
Yeah, I mean, there are certain things I can react to, but elegance in wording belongs to Dr. Roy. That's why Dr. Roy can address certain things much better than me. Back to you.
Okay. The government of the United States of America under the presidency of Abraham Lincoln did away with slavery. That's a nice thing.
Yeah, they actually didn't. John Wilkes Booth killed them before he could accomplish that. And his Democrat vice president took over and kiboshed the whole reconstruction that he had in mind and screwed the whole thing up. Government anywhere, nowhere, have solved any problems ever. You can't give me one example. Anywhere.
I think you're kind of setting up a straw man. Your answer, you're asking for a perfect solution. Human beings are very fallible. Almost nothing is perfect in this world. Theory is perfect, but theory doesn't really exist in the practical world. So, to me, if I had a choice between before the Civil War slavery and after the Civil War Reformation and playing games down south, I would pick the post-Civil War, any and old time. It's incomplete. It was very fallible and screwed up, but it was certainly better than before the Civil War. But again, that's my opinion.
Fair enough. I'll leave it at that. Thanks for humoring me. We'll talk about it another time. Bye to that and the SpaceNet. Good job, Ron.
Okay. Thank you. Paul, take it away.
Okay, very good. From a working point of view, I could imagine somebody over there in Iran telling a couple of workers, you know, you got to go over and try to clean up. Can you know? Meanwhile, what you had was a 50,000-pound dirty bomb. That's what you wound up with. You hit all that equipment down there. You're gonna spread radiation all over. They better hand everybody a Geiger counter. You could invest in Geiger counters. Everybody's gonna need one over there. Wow. Okay, I know Wesley wanted to talk about the Starship that blew up. Well, that was the main story, of course, during the week. And that's exactly what happened. The Starship number 10, and they've been at this with these Starships for over 2 years now, a little over 2 years. This is the 10th try. They're trying to get on a successful suborbital flight before they get to orbit, and they can't even get a successful suborbital flight. Well, they've been suborbital, but they tend to blow up before they get near the surface. And this one was not on launch pad, as was reported initially on the news. They have an area called Mesa, which is a couple of miles away from the actual launch pad. And they have the two parts. They have the heavy booster, and that was involved with this. And Starship was the item that blew up. Starship itself gets put on top of the booster, but they always test the engines before they actually assemble the two parts together before they launch. And that's what they were planning on doing. They were, you know, fueling it. It looked like the liquid oxygen was filled up, and started filling the liquid methane. And, they were doing that for a couple of minutes. And it looked like, from the slow motion slides I saw, that it started to break apart near the top of the vehicle. Now, this thing, the vehicle's around, 220 feet high. So, and like 27 feet, I think, in diameter. Close to 30 feet in diameter. But the, it split near the top first. Which could mean that there's a pipe that comes down, from the top down. It's called the downcomer, and it's a couple of them, and one of them is attached to a header system. You have liquid oxygen in the vehicle, and then above that you have the liquid methane, and then then you have space in between, and that would be where all the payloads go. And then near the top you have another couple of tanks, and they're called the header tanks, and they're also filled with fuel. And the reason they need that is because when they plan on reusing these things, when it comes back down near the surface, the vehicle will flip, and to do that, the fuel would be located all in the wrong spot temporarily, and they need this extra fuel. Actually in a different location to complete the proper burn. Well, none of that has really worked so far, But it looks like either the downcomer pipe split, had a leak and created a problem, or now they're saying the composite wrap tank ambulance tanks all over the vehicle, which contain like liquid nitrogen to do things. They have a purpose. And they believe that one of those might have split, and you know, that might have been a problem. But we'll see. They say that none of them have split before. That's not true. There was evidence of an earlier flight that that they tried to get off the ground. They were going to launch a payload for Israel, and they believe that either the tank blew on that, or frame bracket separated, which allowed that tank to break. Nevertheless, they've got to work this out. This is up to number 10. Elon Musk has got himself some problems besides Tesla. The solar company, his satellites that are in space, you know, they're coming down. They come down every now and then. He's got them at a relatively low location. They should really be higher, but they're not. And the atmosphere expands. The atoms tend to slow these satellites down, and over time they start to. He's got 7,000 of them up there, but he keeps sending up new ones. So, you know, he's got a lot of problems, and he's going to have to try to fix the Starship. Like I keep saying, we're not going to get to the moon anytime soon with this thing. That Starship, when it's finally able to make it to suborbit and eventually orbit, is the same vehicle. You know, although they'll have a better version in the future, but it's the same vehicle that is supposed to be used for the human landing. You know, it will be in orbit around the moon. You're supposed to link up with it with Orion spacecraft from NASA. The crew is supposed to transfer into this Starship, go down to the moon, do what they have to do, come back up after a couple of days or a couple of weeks, and then dock with the Orion spacecraft again. And then the vehicle is supposed to stay there for future missions. It was eventually supposed to be docked with a space station that NASA is planning on canceling now, the Gateway space station. So there's a lot of problems that they've got. They do have a plan B, which I like. You have Jeff Bezos with his Blue Origin company developing a human landing system for the moon. It's being built in parallel with Elon Musk's Starship system. This way, if one was having a problem, they could always use the other one. Originally, it wasn't planned that way. Starship was it. You know, it was like a monopoly. But eventually the businesses, including Blue Origin, politicians, and they all got together. Eventually they created a new contract, a multi-billion dollar contract for Blue Origin. And that development is pretty far ahead in its development. In fact, he's got a lander. When I say he, Jeff Bezos has a lander that's planned to land toward the end of this year on the moon, and this is a massive land. I mean, this thing's bigger than the Lem that landed on the moon, and that would be the cargo version. But the good news there is they have the engines that go, they're called BE-7 engines, which are going to be engines built by Blue Origin, which will be used on a cargo vehicle, will also be the same engines and more or less the same design for an actual crew version of one of these landers. So, I mean, that'll be, you know, behind schedule. They planned on maybe 2028 for a moon landing, with Jeff Bezos, you know, add another year or two to that. Because your initial contracts were for the first landing to be with Starship. This death trap that they keep exploding on the every time they either launch or now on a launch pad. They didn't even get to the launch pad this time. So now he's going to work on number 11. Big problem. He's got all kinds of problems with these vehicles. We'll see. Any comments or questions? WS2N for the Space Net Report.
I think I know why the 10 starships have been blowing up.
There's no commonality. Well, there was pretty much for what was the number 7 and 8. They had a commonality. What was it, 8 or 9? I don't know. They had two back to back that blew up over the Turks and Caicos Islands, and even as they're claiming that was not the same problem on both those launches. But yes, back to you, Brian.
I believe that 9 out of the 10 launches had a new flight controller. And when they played the audio back, every time he would be saying after launch, "What does this button do?"
Okay, I got it. Fine business. Yeah. Yeah. Incompetence, definitely incompetence. Yeah. See them testing enough individual parts like NASA always did with their rockets. NASA has built complete facilities around the country to test individual parts. You know, they'll put the equipment inside of gigantic vacuum chambers, duplicate the temperatures of space, and they'll put them on shake tables, you know, whole vehicles on shake tables, vibrate the heck out of it, you know, duplicating launches. There's a lot of vibration that goes on during a launch. You know, heat, cold, and, you know, and individual parts tested over and over again. And that's what NASA always does. And Jeff Bezos is following those rules that NASA set up years ago. He's testing everything, every little thing he possibly does before he launches. That's why his first launch was this big, heavy vehicle, which was called the New Glenn. The vehicle actually made it to orbit on the first try. You know, the booster, he tried to get him on a drone. That didn't work out. It got close. They're going to try that again this year. Have another launch. And we'll see how they do. But, I mean, their first try, they got the main vehicle, the second stage, automatically right to orbit. And that worked out great. And unfortunately, he can't duplicate that. He can't get these things to do a proper suborbital flight, never mind orbital. But we'll see. Let me drop and see if anybody has comments.
I think that Starship.
Paul, this is Charlie.
It's a flawed design.
I hear you, Charlie.
I agree with you 100% about what NASA does in its testing. I think NASA should come up with another design that's much smaller than the Orion and really do it from scratch and see what they could come up with, because the Orion is just prohibitively expensive. It really is.
can't really. It's been under development for 15, 20 years. They started thinking about that years ago. And it's a $10 billion investment right now. It's roughly $1 billion a year, which is not that bad. The NASA program back in the late 60s, it was 4% of the gross national product. I remember they used to call it that. Of the government's money. And now it's 0.4%. And then it was going lower. Trump administration wants to cut it from $25 billion a year down to 17 or 18 miles a year. So that they'll be going backwards. So I'm not going to hold my breath to see if we make it to the moon anytime soon. And yeah, Charlie, I hear you. You were starting to double with Brian. So over to you, Charlie, and you have any comments? If not, welcome aboard. Back to you, WS2S.
No, I have no comments. If Brian wishes to talk, let him go ahead.
Okay, very good. And he's got some good comments. I know it's running late, so I just wanted to mention this launch tomorrow. They call it KA02 or KA02. What that is it's going to be the Coop, Kuiper, Atlas, and the O2 is 02 is the second flight. What this flight is an Atlas 551 vehicle. That's the biggest vehicle that United Launch Alliance launches, and that means that. Well, it's 551. That means the first five is the diameter of the fairing, which is 5 meters in diameter. And then the second five is the boosters. They're going to attach five solid boosters made by Grumman, GE63 engines, I think they are. But they're made by Northrop Grumman. And you could launch the Atlas V. You can launch with no boosters. You can launch with one. Two, three, pick a number, all the way up to five. So this is 5-5, and then the one stands for the second stage, which is a liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. AC, the AJ-10. That engine has been flown for 5-6 decades. It just built over the years, liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. So it's a 551 setup. It's the heaviest vehicle that they launch, and the reason for it is they're going to launch another 27 Kuiper satellites for Blue Origin. It's really blue. It's the same company. For Jeff Bezos, 27 broadband satellites for Amazon. So Amazon's paying this fee collectively, to give you an idea, to put all their satellites, 3,200 of them, into orbit. That's roughly a $10 billion price tag just to put satellites up. So to give you an idea, $10 billion for a private company to put satellites up compared to $10 billion investment on Orion. So, this will be the second flight. He did one back in April. Very successful. All 27 are operating. That's another problem Starlink has. Sometimes they'll launch 50 at a time, and find out a couple are not working. They'll have to deorbit them for whatever reason. They don't like to leave them up in space, floating up there. Space junk don't work, but all 27 last time worked. and they plan on adding another 27 tomorrow morning at 6:54. Almost 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. I'd like to see that. You can go to the ULA site, United Launch Alliance site, and see that.
I have a thought. One thought came into my mind. Are we online? AFTZZ calling. Charlie, are you still out there?
That time complete.
I keep timing out. Anyway, the Atlas is the next one up. That'll be launched from the same complex, Launch Complex 41 down in Florida. And they'll be launching Kuiper satellites as well. Vulcan has already successfully launched twice. So, again, ULA, United Launch Alliance, first time out of the box, it got to orbit, did what it had to do. In fact, it was a moon mission. The second one as well. That was very successful. And now, soon down the road, they'll be launching more of those. A lot of those launches will carry Kuiper satellites. So Amazon has contracted with ULA on the Atlas rocket, ULA for the Vulcan rocket, which is actually going to be replacing the Atlas V rocket. They've contracted with Aerion Europe, the European company. They have the Aerion 6 rocket that launches out of French Guiana, Kourou, French Guiana. They've contracted many flights with that thing to put their Kuiper satellites up. And they're going to use their own rocket. Amazon is, owned by Jeff Bezos. Jeff Bezos owns Blue Origin. Blue Origin is the manufacturer of the New Glenn rocket, one I talked about before that made it to orbit on the first try. There's going to be many of those satellites launched on that vehicle as well. They have a contract with the government to launch these things within around 3 years. So all these flights, these 80 flights, will be going up. They're predicting within 3 years. So it's quite a commitment, and it's going to be quite a challenge. Any comments before I close? This is WS2M.
The Atlas rocket, what is the payload capacity?
Yeah, they could launch, I think it's 35,000 to low Earth orbit. Which is, of course, it's different if they're launching to geosynchronous orbit or to the moon, but, when you look these up, when you look the information up on all these rockets, they usually give you the three payload capabilities: low Earth orbit, geosynchronous orbit, which is 23,000 miles out, or escape velocity to either the moon or Mars. Back to you, Brian.
That's interesting. Maybe perhaps they could take the executive and legislative branches of the United States government and put them in there and just send them off.
Okay. I've heard people, they want to send the administrative section. That group would love to take a flight off. In fact, Elon Musk wants to send everybody to Mars, so we can do that, Brian. I mean,